So what does stubborn optimism actually look like? Like, what does it mean to be part of the solution? Well, for some young people,
hi guys.
It's about focusing their entire lives on the issue of climate change.
Guys, Corey Johnson wants to meet with us.
What?
We're asking them to give $1 billion to basically to help for a more sustainable job.
Like the students in Beacon High School's environmental club in New York City.
So we wanted to start with a little debrief. I think we're just going to kind of go over like what we've been doing and or what you've been doing, if it was anything related to the environment, you know, dying, that you want to share. So if anyone
we went to visit them a couple months ago, back when the kids were still in school.
So talk to me about when you first started hearing about climate change and things like that, right? Like, what were you feeling?
For me, what freaked me out the most was in science class, just seeing pictures of how much glaciers were disappearing. And to me, that was the moment where I was really like, wow, this is happening rapidly. It is truly horrifying to me.
It's something that sits, you know, on me and makes me feel like I can't get up.
And I think it's even more like a weight on our shoulders that we have to be the ones to deal with it, because we can't really like go back and fix our parents' and grandparents' mistakes.
It's like, how unfair is it to us that the future that we're given is like they got to live their lives, pursue their career paths, get married, have kids. And then you think about your future and your life, and it's like all of us have talked with each other about wanting to be good dads and wanting our grandchildren to be able to like live in a safe, healthy world. And then we have to fight to break even, I guess.
By the time we even get to the positions that these adults in power are in, it's frankly just going to be too late.
We need adults who have means to support the youth.
Join us and like come out with us and organize with us.
Recycle, take time out of your day to research like the issues, find a local town hall that you can sit in and like just educate yourself.
What really helped me, what really calmed me down was like coming to these meetings and just talking to other people who care about the same things that I care about and who are fighting for the same cause.
We really all have to come together and really all have to put our heads together and our bodies together and take this on together, because it seems like such an insurmountable thing, and it is, but the only chance we have is if we really come together and really listen to the science and read the science and believe it.
It has to be an everyday thing, and a lot of people don't realize that in order to make actual change, you have to keep going.
And now that the Beacon High School activists are all stuck at home, they're organizing online with other young people as part of the youth climate movement.
Hey, long time no see, everyone.
Hey, it's nice to see you again.
You as well.
And I am talking about countless Slack channels, Zoom calls.
I think you're muted.
Hours and hours of planning virtual events.
Party was too
big
to stay
this
away.
Is a party. This is a huge party. This is the biggest party we've had all day.
Like Earth Day in April.
I'm so glad everyone can make it to talk with us today. So why don't we just get started?
They organized 3 days of talks, workshops, performances, and conversations with policymakers.
Hello, everybody. We are here with the icon, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Mayor Michael Tubbs from Stockton, California.
So great to be in conversation with you.
How do you see the linkage between the coronavirus pandemic and the climate crisis pandemic?
How is quarantine change your activism?
Well, that's a great question.
I guess I'll start.
My hope is that people will...
These are really good points that I will keep in mind. So that
one Beacon High School student at the center of all this is Shia Bastida.
My name is Shia Bastida, and I am a 17-year-old climate justice activist. I know that a lot of people look at me in the hallways and say, like, oh, they're the climate girl or whatever. But what I'm seeing is that we inspire others through action and through example, because there is no hope without action.
In just a minute, Shia Bastida talks about staying optimistic while dealing with the pressures on young climate activists. On the show today, the mindset to face the climate crisis. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. Stay with us. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, can we make the psychological shift we need to fight climate change? We were just hearing from Shia Bastida about all the work that goes into helping lead the youth climate movement. It's a lot of pressure for a 17-year-old.
There was a long time where I would have 3 or 4 calls a day, and I would run to meetings, and I would, you know, do my homework late at night and sleep for 4 hours and get on calls because I needed to call Germany, so I had to get on a call in the middle of the night. And I was just exhausting myself because I thought that the world was on my shoulders. And the beauty of this movement is that there are so many kids who are willing to do work that you don't have to do all the work yourself. You can ask others to go to the meeting. You can ask others to run the social media. And sharing the responsibility makes us way stronger than trying to do everything yourself.
It means you have to share the limelight, though, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You're okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, I don't know, in the era of Instagram?
Oh, like, honestly, the more people who get a platform for climate activism, the better. Because this is something that is going to last for a very long time. This fight is going to last a very long time. So we can't get too tired and then put it in this little box in our minds and think that we can just keep on going like we are. And the way in which I deal with it is what I want to see the world do, I do myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of leading by example. With me and all the other climate activists. When we organize, there is no hierarchy. We just do it through consensus. And it is harder and it's more time. But things turn out better because we listen to everybody. And we listen to all the different points of view. And I love having friends who are climate activists because then we can share our feelings with each other. For example, I told my friends the other day, I was the first time in 7 months at the beach. And I was just sitting there hearing the ocean and thinking, for the first time ever, actually thinking, my kids are never going to be in a beach. Because we're going to have flooding and the ocean is going to come up all the way to the streets. But beaches take thousands of years to form. So that was the first time which I thought, are my kids ever going to see a beach or be on an island? And these are the type of things that I can share with my friends. And they will say, this is what we have to kick ass harder. You know, this is why we have to share how we feel, because stories touch people and data doesn't.
So you said there's power in stories. So let's talk about your story. What is your background? How did you first even start thinking about climate change?
So my family background is crazy. My mom is Chilean, my dad is Mexican, but I was born in the highlands of Mexico, in this small town, about 10,000 people, called San Pedro Tultepec. And that means the town of Tule, which is this plant that you can weave and make things out of. And that's what my grandfather did his whole life, aside from playing music. And so I was raised with this understanding that we had to take care of our surroundings and that we had to thank the earth for everything that it's providing us. I remember when I was younger and my family and I would go in the highlands of central Mexico by the lake to eat lunch.
Shia Bastida continues her story on the TED stage.
My mom would take out the food that we brought, and I would particularly remember her taking out tortillas. And so the prayer would begin. Thank you to Mother Earth for gifting us with air, water, and the places for our food to grow. Thank you to the hands who planted the seeds. Thank you to the hands who harvested the corn. Thank you to the hands who made the tortillas and for the transportation that it took for all of us to come together and share this beautiful moment. That is how I grew up, with a mindset that we have to thank everything. We have to thank the earth because it gives us everything we need to live. It gives us shelter, food, and all that it asks is that we protect. And to grow up with that love for the earth and that reciprocity and that reciprocal love and understanding was just how my whole world was depicted to me. And when you grow up, you think that everybody thinks the same way that you do. And when you understand that people don't, that's when your bubble gets like, you know, popped. I also remember when I was driving by El Río Lerma. It's the most polluted river in Mexico, and it's right by my hometown. I was driving by it with my dad, and we had to drive with the windows up because the smell would be so bad due to the toxins. And he told me, you know, I used to be able to bathe in this river when I was your age. In one generation, the river went from being a source of life, beauty, and culture to being one of the most neglected places in our community. How does that happen?
You're talking about different generations in your family, yours, your father's, your grandfather's. And it makes me think of this question that every generation has, which is, you know, will things be better for the next generation? And most of us think, well, yes, of course they will. But now maybe that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I think that people who I know, like the grandparents struggled to get on their feet, the parents did a better job, and now we're here and we're getting this great education. But I don't know if my kids are going to have the childhood that I had. How do you tell your kid that the planet is ending? And I think that's a question that I've gotten from parents. When do I start telling my kid about the climate crisis?
They're asking you that?
Yeah, they're asking me that, as if I have an answer. And I don't think I have an answer, because I would never want to do that to a kid. And your childhood kind of ends when you find out, because then you have to do something about it, because so much of the hope is placed on us.
I mean, that doesn't seem very fair that adults are coming to you and asking you what they can do. The tables are turned there. That's a humongous responsibility.
And that is why we're trying to shift the conversation to intergenerational cooperation. So it's actually about telling adults, we want to work with you. We want you to have internships for us. We want you to open your doors for us to come in and have a say. We cannot waste our time blaming each other. We have to come together and know that we can support each other to move forward. I love this saying that says, we don't inherit the land from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. If we have that thinking every time, then I am thinking right now, I'm going to take care of this earth for my children. And then my children are going to think the same. And it's this very basic notion of, you live the place in which you are better than how you found it.
That's Shia Bastida. She is a youth climate activist.